The CNBC app. Global market news in one place. Customizable sections and personalized alerts. Stocks tracking, interactive charts and market insights all in your hands. Stay connected. Stay informed. Download the CNBC app today.
Hello and welcome to Squawk Box. Here are your headlines today. The Nasdaq sees its worst trading week since 2022 as the AI-powered rally hits the brakes, with shares in heavyweight Nvidia dropping 10%. Tesla cuts its prices in a number of major markets as the EV maker deals with a sharp fall in demand and stiff competition out of China.
U.S. House lawmakers approving of a $60 billion in critical aid then for Ukraine, ending months of delay as President Zelensky calls for the rapid transfer of weapons.
This aid will strengthen Ukraine and send the Kremlin a powerful signal that it will not be the second Afghanistan. This is the show of leadership and strength of the United States.
And TikTok faces a dilemma in the United States after House lawmakers approve a bill forcing ByteDance to sell the platform or face a ban, sending it to the Senate.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to see you. So yeah, back in studio.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How was the trip? How was the US? I mean, how were lawmakers really speaking? Yes, of course, around rate cuts.
Yes.
Possibly happening and possibly not out of the United States. So divergent views.
Well, the big one was whether we are going to see policy divergence between the Federal Reserve and everybody else, whether the growth profile in the United States is just much stronger and whether inflation is much stickier than we're seeing elsewhere. So that was a real scene setter and just, of course, the consequences that's going to have for the economy this year. And I also spoke to about half of the governing council over at the ECB, just a truckload of central bankers.
I mean, they've pretty much cemented June, though, by the looks of that conversation,
June is a go, unless there is a big event, and that could still happen. We've seen events out of the Middle East over the past week or so. And whether the labour market data just doesn't play ball, if we get some sort of wildcard number out on that side on wages, that's going to be key. So there are two big factors here. But I think after we get through June, if we do get the rate cut, there's huge question marks as to what comes next. I don't know if that's appreciated by the market, that you might get a collapse in growth. You may see inflation very much come down, which then magnifies the growth concerns, or you don't. You get a sticky situation like the United States. And I really don't think there's enough of those wildcard scenarios baked into market expectations.
Yeah, and I mean, market already had been expecting one thing, right? Of course, at the start of the year, we had that whole conundrum of those six rate cuts anticipated for the year. And market now has accepted that, fine, we may only get two, if not less, if not none, for this year. But you're quite right. There's the other side of the conversation, which I thought was very interesting. We even had one of the central bankers as well out of the United States actually point to the possibility of a thought.
Yes.
And it's a whisper, right? It's a far, far cry whisper of a possible hike in rates. If you see literally the data, which is exactly what the Fed has always said, they want to remain data dependent. The data looks like you could actually have to stay high for even longer, maybe even go the other way.
The point from the ECB, and I was talking to them on camera, off camera, one view is, look, it's just sheer speculation to be talking about what happens after June because they're so data dependent now, a little bit different to the past, that they really cannot make a call. If that is the case, and they're saying, well, where does that leave a 50 basis point rate cut then? Yeah. Because that's also not a scenario that we're talking about. We're talking about 25 basis point moves and, you know, gradual over time. If you've got it wrong, then that brings back the potential for 50, doesn't it?
100%.
So there's that scenario. The other one is something that was spoken about as in the backdrop, and I think perhaps somewhat overlooked, the geopolitical risk for Europe. If there is a perception that Europe is not winning, that Ukraine is not winning the war, then it has an impact on sentiment in Europe. This is what one central banker told me. It can impact sentiment in Europe and impact growth again. So it magnifies that deceleration in growth. So I think there's a lot in the geopolitics. I mean, one of the best takeaway messages, though, was that we had all these risks coming into 2024. And from the IMF perspective, they think some of those risks are abating, which is welcome news. And that does lean to the side for some of the bulls out there.
I'm going to push back and say, what about commodities? You have this huge commodity price boom that's going up right now. gold, as we've seen it, oil still around $90 a barrel. The secondary inflationary impact of all of that,
yes,
that's going to be another factor, right?
Well, and from different factors too. This is what the IMF's been talking about when they keep saying countries need to build fiscal buffers. It sounds a bit, you know, sketches that very wide brushstrokes, yeah, on fiscal buffers. But the point is that if you've got some countries that are very reliant on commodities and don't have a fiscal buffer, then it can bring an economic shock. So some countries more exposed than others, particularly at this point in time.
Yeah. Look, this is definitely going to be stuff we're going to be talking about throughout the week. Then a very interesting week as well to follow through. It might be a little bit light on the data side, though, which is pretty much what you're getting, particularly out of the United States. But we're full on in earnings season, right? So around 140-odd companies will be reporting their numbers across this week, and that will be the keen focus. But here's another focus for you, the likes of NVIDIA, right? Getting a bit of a hit, but we'll focus on that in a second. But look at what's happened to this market just last week. We started the first quarter of this year around a 10% increase then for the S&P 500. We thought, well, now we're seemingly continuing the boom from the last two or so months of last year. That's begun to fade quite significantly. We're still firmly above 5,000 points as we started just this month. That's come off. More than 3% fall then for the S&P 500, a 5.5% fall then across the week as well for the NASDAQ. In fact, both indices then having what has been their worst week pretty much since October as well as March last year. So these are significant drop-offs then for both of these indices. The Dow pretty much flat across the week, again, helped again by the earnings season that we're currently sitting in. In fact, just on Friday alone, the Dow Jones managed to buck the trend. American Express managing to move up 6% in the biggest push up then for the Dow Jones last week. And it was NVIDIA, right? Again, the tech counters themselves are the ones to look out for. Yes, there's been a broad sell-off across here. Now, one could look at it and think, well, perhaps they've just run too hard for too long, right? And that could be the pullback that we're seeing in this market picture. Or is it a case of people are just worried that earnings may not necessarily move up as much as the market had initially anticipated, or that may not continue into the foreseeable future? A few question marks around a lot of these tech counters, NVIDIA being the biggest one to look at. $212 billion in market value lost on Friday then for NVIDIA. Ultimately, its biggest loss in the day session, right, since the pandemic era, pretty much. So massive losses there, big 10%, 762 is where you're pretty much seeing that one. Onto the Treasury's front then. Well, bond yields here up amid, of course, the fears out of the Middle East. Those had been question marks then that had been placed into the market, riskier assets, perhaps what investors might be looking towards a little bit for now. And that's only because it seems as though Middle East tensions might ease up ever so slightly. But is that really the case? Are we a little bit risk on now in this environment? Yields are, however, still hovering at those multi-month highs. I mean, just look at the two-year. That's still above 5%. In fact, it's gone up 38 basis points then just this month alone for the two-year at that 5% mark. The 10-year note sitting at 4.65. Onto the dollar crosses of late. Of course, the dollar has strengthened on the back of the expectations then that rates will remain higher for a little bit longer here. When we might get those rate cuts is a big question mark. The inflationary environment still remaining relatively upbeat. So too the job market and growth out of the United States. So all of that has played certainly into the dollar remaining a little bit more upbeat, a bit flat though today thus far, as you can see then, with more strength then coming for sterling and euro. Still 154 the mark. Of course, Friday is when the Bank of Japan is anticipated to review its interest rate policy, and that will perhaps give a clearer sense of what we look like, whether 155 is the mark, whether more conversations need to be had on raising interest rates then out of Japan. Does that happen on Friday? Overall, this is what the Asian market also then begins to look like, rebounding then from Friday's sell-off. Again, the chip sector being a significant part of what is happening today, then rebounding, having seen a lot of the chips actually go down just last Friday. The Shanghai Composite is 0.5% weaker. And again, it was those chips, as I've been making note of. Israel launching that strike at Iran, of course, causing stocks to fall. That's pretty much what has been the the real crux of what the market has been focusing on across all of last week. A big increase of 1.8% though for the Hang Seng, Karen.
Arbile, let's also set the scene ahead of this week. We are expecting two key US data points as investors assess the future rate path. Thursday sees the first reading of first quarter GDP that's expected to slide to 2.4% on the year from 3.4% in the previous quarter. And the Fed's preferred PCE inflation gauge is expected to show price pressures remaining sticky, ticking up 10 basis points on February's level to 2.6% on year. Let's get to Max Kettner, who is Chief Multi-Asset Strategist, HSBC. Max, geopolitics and economics all front and centre. I want to pick up on the geopolitics because you've mentioned in some of your research that given the past 25 years, if anything had shown you after these events, there's a buying opportunity. Is this time different? Because it's hard to see where we've ended a geopolitical event. It feels like it's one ongoing story into the next, more twists and turns, which makes it very, very hard to anticipate when to buy.
Yeah, good morning and thanks for having me. I don't think it's different this time because when we look, for example, at the last episode that was pretty long lasting as well, think 2016 to 2020, you know, we had to deal with a trade war. We had to deal with these trade tensions between the US and other countries, right? We had to deal with a couple of geopolitical events there as well. So it all almost went one after the other as well. And at the end of it, right, the focus was still on earnings. It was still on growth. It was still on, you know, the path of interest rate. Think about 2018, QT, the Fed is sort of over tightening and then being forced to reverse course in 2019. So despite us back then also having sort of continued geopolitical concerns, actually the focus was still very much on this earnings, the growth and the interest rate path. And I don't think this time is going to be very different. I did hear you now for the last couple of minutes really speaking about perhaps the possibility of a rate hike even, right? Those are really the much more front and center concerns, I think, that will drive financial market volatility in the next couple of months.
Let's get into that. Policy divergence was such a big word last year, a big phrase last week at the IMF, just what the Fed's going to do and whether that's going to constrain, undermine other central banks that feel the need to get going with cutting at some stage this year. Do you think the data is again going to highlight that the Fed is in a different position to the rest?
They're in a slightly different position, right? Absolutely, they're in a slightly different position. But let's face it, when we look at market pricing, that is fully in the price now. So when we look at, for example, what the SOFR curve is pricing for the Fed, they're pricing 1.5 rate cuts this year. They're pricing 1.5 rate cuts until December this year, whereas for the ECB, it's still around 80 basis points. It's still more than three cuts. So the divergence is really somewhat in the price right now. Whereas when we look at the data, I think what we're doing right now in terms of the market reaction is perhaps a little bit the exact opposite mistake that we've done just 4 or 5 months ago. Remember 4 or 5 months ago, the narrative was, well, if we annualize 3 month or 6 month core inflation or services inflation, then it's already below 2%. So, you know, just a couple of months ago, the narrative was as late as the Fed was in tightening, they're now running the risk in over tightening and they're running the risk of cutting too late. That's where those 6-7 rate cuts, those expectations for 6-7 rate cuts at the start of the year came in. And that's now really being challenged. And I do think when we look at the data, yes, of course, services and super core inflation does remain sticky, but that's been the case also 3-4 months ago, right? We have seen that reacceleration for quite some time, for about 9 months already. So I do think we're perhaps exaggerating a little bit on the hawkish side now. And June for the FOMC is still in play. Let's just imagine we get perhaps PCE a couple of basis points below expectations. The next 1 or 2 months, perhaps just in line with expectations or even below expectations. Then suddenly a June rate cut would be fully in play again.
Would you not want to be a little bit firmer in the stance that it's going down though, Max, that you'd want to see it actually headed towards that 2% target, just a little bit more firmer to bring especially June into play a little bit later on in the year, perhaps. But surely June becomes a little too soon to get the kind of data you need.
Yeah, look, I do think we're sometimes a bit too focused on the timing of the first rate cut, because of course, historically, what we would think is, okay, as soon as we figure out the first rate cut, that then is the start of the proper rate cut cycle. I think that's probably what we should be talking about more. The Fed has made it pretty clear that they said, look, once we get towards 2.5%, you know, that's the time when we can start cutting. So to your question, we don't need to see much evidence, or we don't need to reach 2% before they can start cutting rates. Let's not forget, you know, we're talking about a core PCE of 2.7, 2.8%. So we're talking about real rates that are almost 300 basis points, right? We're talking about an awful lot, an awful positive real rate that should allow a start of a rate cutting cycle. The question then is, how far can that go? Can that really go in one go down to 2.5 or 3% over the next sort of 12 to 24 months? Or is that much rather a recalibration? Is that much rather something that will look like 2019, that might look a bit like 1995, where we see a couple of rate cuts, but then the Fed at least temporarily being forced to stay put for a couple of months or perhaps a couple of quarters to then see the second leg of inflation heading lower?
I mean, I wonder, Max, that I think there's also a clear sense of not wanting to get this wrong. And if you begin cutting, you probably just don't want to go the other way or worry that you then have to stay at those levels for a little longer. But I also want to touch on just equities, if I may. We're seeing a brilliant pullback in the markets right now. Was a lot of this expected in your point of view, or is this perhaps the market making too much of the higher for longer stance in rates?
Yeah, I think in equities, it's definitely for us a buying opportunity actually across risk assets. When we look at the dollar, when we look at US yields and look at the repricing of emerging market assets, for example, then actually emerging market assets here look quite attractive. Yeah, because suddenly we're talking about a Fed hike again, a potential one. That is exactly the point where, you know, you're getting perhaps towards a bit of a stretched dollar positioning, a stretched US rates positioning. And that's the point where you then want to start buying emerging market assets, both in the equity and also on the credit space. And within equities, I think you're absolutely right. We should be talking a little bit more about the earnings picture as well, about the subdued earnings expectations picture. Look at, for example, things like consumer discretionary, energy, industrials. All those earnings expectations for those sectors are heavily subdued for the Q1 earnings season now. So I do suspect that, and I do expect as well that, you know, the earnings can come in quite strongly against, again, very pessimistic expectations. And that should lend a bit of support where ultimately, we've got to be honest, higher yields now and higher rates are a reflection of better economy. They're a reflection of better activity, better earnings. And that ultimately is good for equities.
Max, thanks for getting us warmed up this morning and getting us into gear for the week. Thank you very much for joining us so early. Max Kettner with us, Chief Multi-Asset Strategist at HSBC. For more on what could be next for US equities after three straight down weeks, you can check out all the latest analysis at CNBC.com. China's central bank left the country's benchmark lending rates unchanged, in line with expectations. It comes after strong economic data in the first quarter, with growth beating forecasts at 5.3% on the year. I discussed the state of China's economy with the IMF's first deputy managing director, Geeta Gopinath, at the fund's spring meetings in Washington, and she told me that emerging market economies are continuing to face challenges.
If you look at emerging markets as a whole, I'm taking the whole group, there is heterogeneity. If you take the emerging market group as a whole, we've seen what I would describe as weak net flows into the emerging market group as a whole. If you look at their share of global flows that they are receiving, pre-pandemic that share was 25%, now it's 20%. Within that box, you know, one of the countries, of course, where flows have reversed quite a bit is China. But it's not a China-only story. And somewhat more worryingly, if you look at foreign direct investment, which is so critical for growth in emerging and developing countries, that has been the weakest it's been in the last 20 years to this region. Now, why is this? It reflects many factors, including very strong growth prospects in the US, weakening growth trends in some of the major emerging market economies, and of course, the big interest rate differential that we're seeing with between the advanced economies and emerging markets.
You can check out more from our coverage at the IMF, including what 12 ECB policymakers told CNBC about the central bank's rate path. That's on CNBC.com.
Now coming up on the show, fresh from Friday's Cybertruck recall, Tesla slashes prices on a range of car models as it looks to tackle falling sales and increasing competition. Plus, Volodymyr Zelensky welcomes the latest round of U.S. support to Ukraine as the House of Representatives finally passes its long-awaited $60 billion military aid package. And the Bitcoin halving may have had limited immediate upside for the digital currency. Some crypto bulls are eyeing gains in the months ahead. We'll discuss that with Marion Labor of Deutsche Bank Research at 8:30 CET.
Ambition to me is about doing better.
I think ambition creates a pathway.
The best advice I can give someone starting off a career is don't have a career, have lots of careers, try loads of different things.
Talk to people and put your ambition out there.
I don't feel that I've hit peak ambition because it's a learning journey.
CNBC is where ambition meets opportunity. What does living ambitiously mean to you? Hear it from our CNBC anchors, reporters, and global business leaders on CNBC.com.
Now, it's a big week of tech earnings. Tesla is set to report its first quarter results after the market close tomorrow. That will be followed then by Meta on Wednesday and Microsoft and as well as Alphabet then. That's set to then report on Thursday. Now, the reports will come after the S&P 500 suffered its worst weekly performance since March last year, with tech stocks in particular weighing heavily on the index. Speaking of Tesla, they've cut prices of some of its best-selling models, including the Model Y as well as Model S, in both the United States as well as in China. The carmaker is battling higher inventories amid increased competition. It reported its first annual decline in quarterly vehicle deliveries for 3 years in the first 3 months of this year, with full earnings then, as we've noted, due tomorrow. Of course, we can just take a quick look at the Chinese EV makers thus far in trading, all down quite significantly then today. Li Auto 7.5%, Leap Motor more than 3% down as well, with GW Motor more than 7% weaker. Of course, the likes of Li Auto then having had significant uptick in deliveries as well of late, though, but down significantly in today's trade. So question marks here for I suppose, not just EV makers, but certainly as well for Tesla. So you drop off prices, one of the key reasons why things haven't looked good in your previous earnings report was because, well, margins were squeezed. Now you've squeezed them even more. Where to from here does Elon Musk actually go? And India was supposed to be that next frontier, right? But it reminded me so much of when Tim Cook went to India last year to open that Apple store. It's going to take a long time if you're going to rely on India. It's not the kind of growth out of China that we saw.
Yeah, indeed. And don't forget, if we're talking about selling product domestically into that market, that Tesla decided to drop its low-priced mass market model. So it's really selling the existing stock that it's got, the existing types of models. So not exactly the newest stuff that's coming off the factory belt. The points I would make is that it's not just a problem for Elon Musk. It's a problem for other car makers that are getting into the EV space. And this is something I pitched at Christian Lindner, the German finance minister, the other week, about the competition coming out of China. And his message to me is like, look, German cars are the best in the world. But there is a price-sensitive customer out there. And you start cutting the price on Teslas, and not just the cheap product from BYD and the rest, you've got a price war taking place. And that's very difficult for automakers trying to get up to speed with new technology and trying to make a profit. I was looking at the operating profit margins for Tesla over the years. They have been erratic, which is not great for any industry player. They were 19-odd percent in the first quarter of 2022, right down to a low of just about 7.5% by the second quarter of last year. That is a huge gap in terms of operating margin. And as we talk about price cuts today, you've got to say that's going to have an impact.
Yeah. I mean, is EV at an inflection point now, right? They kind of have to not maybe reconsider the model as a whole, but really reconsider where it currently is, how you get the materials out. You haven't got enough infrastructure globally anyway. So where does it need to pull back and build infrastructure, then develop again, and then push forward? Or if you do that, will you lose momentum entirely and EV then gets lost? It's such a tough one, I think, as well.
Yeah, maybe a lean operating ship, which is what Musk is going after with the layoffs last week across the board. Thank you for listening to Squawk Box Europe Express.
For more market-moving news, you can head to CNBC.com or join us again on the show with me, Steve Sedgwick, and Karen Cho, weekdays on CNBC.